A bridge between the two buildings was taken down. Are there permits for this destruction? How are you informed about all of this in the community?
So they've knocked the windows out of the bridge. As we were coming up here today, they had the instruments of destruction ready to bash it down. They're trying to get something down as fast as they can so that it's fait accompli and they got to take the whole building down. But the sad situation is that there isn't rationality involved. Nobody's thinking what's really best for the city. It's how much money they can spend as fast as possible. This is the perfect definition of pork barrel. Nobody's thinking about judicial justice. They put the sheep's clothing of judicial justice on this project. It's just pork barrel. And it's to funnel money, unfortunately, away from what our city really, really needs into iron bars. It is as regressive as anything that's ever been done in the history of New York City. And it's shocking that some of the political leaders are going along with this. But, you know, one of the things that has made this happen is there was a lot of corruption, Amy, and people who should have opposed this got bought off. They're doing anything they can to build this jail.
Chris Marte, and, is it possible to change this?
Yeah, so regarding the permits, there aren't permits to demolish these buildings, just a bridge. And as we saw a few weeks ago,
Chris Marte, John Alpert, and Jan Lay. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right. 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO independent and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. Right now, during our end-of-year drive, is the perfect time to contribute. Give now and help us reach our goal of $70,000 by December 31st. Make your tax-deductible year-end donation at kboo.fm/give today.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon's landmark gun control measure could be delayed by 2 months, Portland Charter Commissioners refer new amendments to voters, and the Oxford Dictionary picks their word of the year. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, December 5th, 2022. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going to kboo.fm/give. I'm Michelle Coppola. Oregon's recently passed gun control measure 114 was set to go into effect this week on the 8th, but the Department of Justice has asked a federal judge to postpone the gun permitting requirement of that law. They say they want to push that part of the law back 2 months to give law enforcement more time to implement it. The DOJ says they made the request because they heard from local law enforcement that they would not be able to process permit applications starting on the 8th. The other parts of the measure, like the restrictions on large-capacity magazines and applying for background checks, can move ahead. Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum said of the request, quote, "Postponing the permit requirement by approximately 2 months should give Oregon law enforcement time to have a fully functional permitting system in place. If Judge Immergut agrees to the postponement, then starting in February, anyone who purchases a gun in Oregon will be required to have a permit," end of quote. There have been other challenges to Measure 114 as well from a number of different groups, and some law enforcement officials have said they won't enforce the law. One of those legal challenges was heard Friday, and the judge is expected to rule on whether to block the gun control law this week. Following the 2022 election, ranked choice voting is among the changes coming to elections in Portland and Multnomah County. Portland also approved a reorganization of its city government. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Reforms to elections and democracy are coming to Oregon in a big way in the wake of November's election. Portland voters have approved a major overhaul of the city government. And in the larger Multnomah County, the electorate approved of ranked choice voting for countywide offices. Jay Lee, democracy researcher with the Northwest-based organization Sightline Institute, says this is an improvement. Under the old system, if a candidate gets more than 50% of the vote in the primary, which usually has lower turnout than the general election, they automatically win. He says ranked voting also will prevent strategic voting.
Where you say, oh, well, I really like this candidate, but they're never going to win. And so I need to vote for what I think might be a more popular candidate to stop a candidate who I don't like from winning. The opportunity to do that is really mitigated in a substantial way by ranked choice voting.
Multnomah is the second county in Oregon to implement a ranked choice voting system. Benton County adopted it in 2016. In Portland, the city council has been reorganized so that the city is split into four districts with three councilors from each district. Councilors will be chosen through a ranked choice voting system. And Lee says under the current system of the city council, each member is responsible for their own bureaus, such as housing or transportation, which led to siloing and has been a challenge to collaboration across bureaus.
Now, all of city council is going to be managing all of the departments together with the help of a city manager to help make sure everything keeps running and the trash gets picked up and the water keeps getting piped.
Lee says it's exciting that Portland and Multnomah County are experimenting with how to make democracy run better, noting that systems like ranked choice voting have been used in countries around the world.
The system of local jurisdictions and state jurisdictions trying old election systems that maybe have not picked up steam in the United States is really going to be a trend in the coming years. I think we're going to see a lot more of this over the next decade or two.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
Portland Charter Commissioners voted over the weekend to send some new changes to Portland voters and others for review by the City Council. This is the second stage of the Portland Charter Commission. The first was a volunteer group that put together the measure to overhaul Portland city government. Voters passed that measure in November. Voters can expect to see five or six measures on the November 2024 ballot. Some proposals will be grouped together, like the ones to delete outdated or unclear language. Voters can also expect to see ballot measures like those and others to clarify the city's role in protecting natural resources and managing water and sewage. Some of the other proposals were referred to the City Council. The Council will consider a proposal to remove a 5% hotel tax, and another would require the City to create a budget process that's open to all residents. The Council will also hear proposals to create environmental justice and meaningful public engagement as core values of the City. Proposal number 15 would expand the right to vote the fullest extent allowed by the law in city elections if the council adopts it. The City Council will also hear a proposal from transparency advocates and local journalists to create a transparency advocate position within the City Auditor's Office. Portland City Council can choose to deliberate, amend, and vote on those amendments at any time. There isn't a timeline when they must consider the proposals. The Charter Review Commission will present a report on their efforts to the City Council after the new year on January 19th. The Supreme Court considers an election law theory that critics say could cause chaos. Lawmakers condemn former President Trump's idea to suspend the Constitution, and Democrats switch up the presidential primary calendar. With more on those stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
A state legislature could draw an extreme partisan gerrymander without consequence, something that the state court would otherwise strike down as illegal under the state constitution. That is just as backwards as it sounds. State lawmakers could violate their own constitutions.
Eliza Swearenbecker with the Brennan Center for Justice says the independent state legislator theory being argued by conservatives before the Supreme Court this week would be dangerous and permit highly partisan election rules. In the case Moore v. Harper, some North Carolina lawmakers are arguing that the Constitution doesn't impose the usual limits on the power of state legislatures when they regulate federal elections. Former President Donald Trump is repeating his false claims about 2020 and posted that a fraud of this magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. That drew a reaction from Republican Representative Mike Turner of Ohio.
Well, you know, he says a lot of things that, but that doesn't mean that it's ever going to happen. So you got to accept exact fact from fantasy. And fantasy is that we're going to suspend the Constitution.
Turner's remarks to ABC News and posted online echo those of some, but not all, Republicans. Georgia Secretary of State records show mail-in voting last month fell more than 80% compared to 2 years ago. Observers say that's due to tighter rules imposed by state lawmakers, but both sides are trying to talk up turnout for Tuesday's Senate runoff there, including in Spanish.
Hola, Georgia. Soy America Ferrera. Senador Pastor Warnock está en una segunda vuelta electoral. Es por eso que les pido que voten el 6 de diciembre o antes.
Actress America Ferrera encourages Georgians to vote for incumbent Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock against Republican challenger Herschel Walker. A win by Warnock would give Democrats a 51st vote in the Senate and reduce the influence of dissenting Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona.
I came back to ask you to help us finish what we've started. Because this is where our movement for change began. Right here.
President Obama may have begun his successful 2012 presidential campaign in Iowa, but the Democratic National Committee has voted to change its calendar for presidential primaries, knocking Iowa out of its early spot. Nearly a quarter of voters in last month's midterms said they had no religious affiliation, according to an Associated Press nationwide poll. The survey found these voters backed Democratic candidates and supported abortion rights by significant percentages, helping deliver wins for Democrats in battleground states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Arizona. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Iowa appears to have lost its first-in-the-nation presidential caucus status, at least among leaders of the Democratic Party. Iowa has held that pole position in every presidential campaign since 1972 and has therefore had what some say is an outsized influence on the outcome of several elections. Mark Moran has more with election officials in Iowa.
For the first time in almost 50 years, Iowa will not hold the first-in-the-nation presidential caucuses for Democrats. The National Party has ousted the state from the number one position, but could face a challenge from Iowa law. Iowa cemented its status as an influential state in the political process during the 1976 presidential campaign, when a little-known peanut farmer named Jimmy Carter burst onto the national political scene with his folksy charm, moral charisma, and a genuine connection with Iowa farmers. Then governor of Georgia, Carter won the Democratic caucus that year and was elected president. Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate says since then, Iowa has leveled the playing field for presidential hopefuls.
These other states cater to the big candidate, the newbie, the underdog, the other candidates who perhaps don't have the same kind of resources won't have a chance to be even competitive because of the expense of running for president.
Iowa law mandates its caucuses be first in the nation, and the state has weathered challenges to its status before. But the National Democratic Party has never taken official action to name a new first-in-the-nation event until now. Critics of the caucuses have pointed out that Iowa's population isn't representative of the entire country, and that the state shouldn't have such an outsized influence. Pate has encouraged the Democratic Party to reconsider ignoring Iowa's prominence in rural America. But as the state's top elections official, he must remain nonpartisan in this debate.
I don't get to wear a team jersey. I'm the referee. But as a referee, I want to see the game. I want to make sure we have the game. And in this case, the nomination process is very, very important.
National Democrats have said the change is intended to hear the voices of more people. For Iowa News Service, I'm Mark Moran.
Changes to the way people vote are coming to Washington State. Voters in King County have moved local elections from odd to even number years, and Seattle will hold ranked choice voting primaries. Eric Tegedoff has the details.
Democracy reforms got the seal of approval from many Washington State voters this November. While some changes were big, others were subtle but could make a difference in election turnouts. In King County, voters approved a measure to move local elections from odd to even-numbered years. Jay Lee, democracy researcher with the Northwest-based organization Sightline Institute, says this will make a difference in elections immediately. He says turnout craters in odd-numbered years when federal elections aren't on the ballot.
By moving elections to even years, you can really increase voter turnout and increase the number of residents who have a say in local decision-making.
King County, which has more than 2 million residents, approved the measure to move elections by nearly 70%. An arguably bigger change is coming to elections in Seattle. Voters approved ranked choice voting in the city's primaries. However, Lee says state law bars Seattle from using ranked choice voting in general elections. He says state lawmakers have been looking at this issue in recent years.
Moving forward in the future, one of the avenues to change this is to provide for what folks are calling a local option. To give localities the option, if they choose to do ranked choice voting or another system.
Lee notes that in two other Washington counties, Clark and San Juan, voters opted not to change their charters and allow ranked choice voting. Regardless, he says, this is an exciting time in Washington state because states and localities have a chance to try new ways of voting to see what models work.
There's a concept in political science where states are laboratories of democracy. States are able to try different systems and different policies that are harder to do at the federal level and much bigger changes.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Listening to an end-of-year fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Noise Filter, your public health podcast. At 6 p.m., it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, let's talk about race. Tonight's weather going to be cloudy but dry with an overnight low right at freezing, 32 degrees. Tomorrow, it'll be cloudy with a high of 43. Today in history, in 1955, the American Federation of Labor and the Congress of Industrial Organizations merged to form the AFL-CIO. It's the largest federation of unions in the United States, representing more than 12 million active and retired workers. The quote of the day is from the first president of South Africa and Nobel Prize laureate Nelson Mandela, who died on this day in 2013. Mandela said, quote, "A fundamental concern for others in our individual and community lives would go a long way in making the world a better place we so passionately dreamt of." Survey results show most young adults are worried about losing access to birth control. There are certain steps being taken in some states and in Congress to codify people's right to obtain birth control, but advocates say that not enough headway has been made. Edwin J. Vieira has more on that in New York.
Results of a new survey show a large number of young people are worried about losing access to birth control. The survey by the nonprofit Power to Decide finds about 7 in 10 young adults think the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, which protected the right to an abortion, will also limit access to birth control. Federal lawmakers have stepped in to try to codify rights to birth control with the Right to Contraception Act, which passed in the House but is stalled in the Senate. However, Tara Mancini with Power to Decide notes there are actions that can be taken at the state level.
We've seen some states work to amend constitution to give folks the right to abortion, but, you know, a state like Michigan was even more broad, recognizing the right to not just abortion, but sexual and reproductive health care.
In 2019, New York approved the Comprehensive Contraception Act, which provides insurance coverage for FDA-approved contraceptive drugs, devices, and products. Mancini adds providing more funding to Title X programs could help, so clinics and communities can offer family planning and STI testing services. She says this would also reduce the number of so-called contraception deserts, including in parts of New York. Power to Decide is hoping more people bring issues about abortion and contraception to light so they won't seem so rare. Mancini notes there is still a stigma associated with birth control, including the myth that one method is best for everyone, but her group works to ensure that people have access to a wide range of birth control options.
every person is different, every body is different, and so what works for me might not work for my neighbor. So that's why it's essential that folks have access to the full range of birth control methods, which there are over 18 FDA-approved method categories.
She says another myth is that birth control is easy to get. Despite myths and stigmas, Mancini feels hopeful for the future of birth control, since the survey finds it isn't a controversial topic overall and is accepted across ethnicities and the political divide. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection.
And the news about reproductive rights continues as conservative groups who were victorious in overturning Roe v. Wade now want to outlaw abortion pills sent by mail. That challenges longstanding scientific evidence about their safety. The Christian advocacy group Alliance Defending Freedom is hoping a Texas judge appointed by former President Donald Trump will rule favorably to outlaw the pills, which were first approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 2000. Ros Brown has more.
A conservative group that helped wage a decades-long successful effort to overturn the constitutional right to an abortion is now asking a Texas judge to prevent abortion pills from being mailed to consumers. The group, Alliance Defending Freedom, strategically filed a lawsuit last month in the court of a Texas judge known for his opposition to contraceptives and same-sex marriage. Carrie Baker writes for Ms. Magazine that the group's claim that the pills aren't safe has been debunked several times.
Abortion pills are safer than many over-the-counter drugs like Tylenol, yet they're claiming that they're not safe. And I just worry that this judge, who clearly is very political, he will just go along with it.
The lawsuit claims the Food and Drug Administration exceeded its authority when it approved mifepristone in 2000. When coupled with another drug, it can be used to end a pregnancy within the first 10 weeks. Abortion pills accounted for 54% of all U.S. abortions 2 years ago, according to the Guttmacher Institute. The complaint against the FDA argues abortion pills were unlawfully fast-tracked without required research. Baker notes the agency published a 40-page rebuttal letter to those objections, which the Alliance Defending Freedom failed to address in its complaint.
The FDA approved the abortion pill in 2000. It's been 22 years. They're still trying to say, oh, you did it wrong, you did it too quickly, you didn't pay attention to the science, and they're just wrong.
The Alliance's lawsuit also asks the Texas judge to revive the 1873 Comstock Law, which banned sending information regarding contraceptives and other sexual information through the U.S. mail. Baker calls it an attempt to reactivate zombie laws.
They're trying to literally bring back to life these laws that have been dead for decades, that are so antiquated. Yet these folks are trying to bring those laws back into effect to take away access to abortion pills.
For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
Attorney General Merrick Garland recommitted his department to Native civil rights cases at the White House Tribal Nations Summit recently. That includes a discrimination case at the Grand Gateway Hotel in Rapid City, South Dakota. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland is reiterating the Justice Department's commitment to civil rights cases for Native Americans. He spoke at the White House Tribal Nations Summit last week in Washington, D.C. Garland pointed to the case announced earlier this year involving the Grand Gateway Hotel in Rapid City. As South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger reports, one group wants the DOJ to do more.
The Justice Department announced its lawsuit against the hotel in October. That came several months after the owner posted on social media that Native Americans were no longer allowed at their hotel and bar. Days after, some Natives were allegedly denied service. Attorney General Garland says protecting the civil rights of all individuals was a founding purpose of the department.
It remains an urgent priority. For example, earlier this fall, the department filed a lawsuit against the owners and operators of a hotel and bar in South Dakota for violating the Civil Rights Act of 1964 by discriminating against Native American customers. The Justice Department is working hard to make good on our commitment to improve the well-being of tribal communities.
The president of a group that initially brought the lawsuit says he appreciates the DOJ looking into racist activity in Rapid City. However, Indian Collective's Nick Tilson says the department is not willing to look into deeper systemic racism.
We asked them to expand the scope of their investigation because we understand the behaviors of the Grand Gateway Hotel are a byproduct of a culture of systematic racism here in the community. Taking down Grand Gateway or holding them accountable is not going to be the end all for us.
Tilson also says Indian Collective and others are asking the DOJ to pardon the country's longest serving indigenous political prisoner, Leonard Peltier. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
The public comment period ends Monday, December 5th on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's draft of its Alaska Native Relations Policy. Crystal Cheeskook Leonetti is the agency's Alaska Native Affairs Specialist.
So while the Native American policy applies everywhere, including Alaska, we needed to have these unique considerations.
The draft policy recognizes the impacts of climate change on Alaska's landscape. It also mentions the inclusion of indigenous traditional knowledge in co-management efforts. The policy will also require Alaska Native Relations training and education for Fish and Wildlife Service employees.
That is designed to illuminate the current status of the nutritional and spiritual and cultural connection to living a subsistence way of life, that it is also really important for Alaska Native people to continue that way of life for reasons beyond nutrition.
The relationship between the agency and Alaska Native people has not always been amicable. Leonetti says improving those relationships is central to developing the policy. Since 2016, she's worked alongside a 12-member team of representatives from every region of Alaska.
We wanted to make sure every word and every sentence was agreed upon by the entire group. And if it wasn't, we talked about it until we could agree on the language that made sense for everybody.
Leonetti expects it will be signed and included in the agency's national manual sometime in 2023. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Harvard University announced recently that it holds hair clippings from at least 700 Native American children, many of whom attended U.S. Indian boarding schools. That revelation has horrified indigenous activists and spurred calls to strengthen protections for human remains and sacred artifacts. Catherine Carley has more on that story in Massachusetts.
Indigenous activists in the Commonwealth are calling on state lawmakers to pass legislation to strengthen protections for Native American remains. The outcry follows an announcement from Harvard's Peabody Museum that it has hair samples from indigenous people around the world, including clippings from some 700 Native American children, many of whom attended U.S. Indian boarding schools. The hair was part of a donation to the museum in 1935. Jean-Luc Pierrit, president of the North American Indian Center of Boston, says he was horrified to learn about it.
This was a severing of a spirit and of identity, forcefully cutting off the connection between the children and their home communities.
Pierrit says lawmakers can ensure that publicly funded institutions in the Commonwealth adhere to federal protections for Native American remains by passing an Act to Protect Native American Heritage, which was originally filed in 2019. The Peabody Museum did not respond to multiple requests for comment, although it has created a website detailing efforts to return the hair samples to families and tribes. Pierrit says the museum's collection is indicative of a broader issue, that sacred objects and human remains continue to be, in his words, held captive by public institutions. He says the Peabody Museum needs to correctly identify the origins of the samples to help families properly heal, as well as the indigenous students on Harvard's campus.
You know, we've had students feeling like they're in a situation where they couldn't even breathe. And not even really knowing like how much is in there, but just like knowing that these are places that hold so much that needs to go back home.
He says legislation would also have hastened the recent return of items and remains from the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre by a museum in the town of Barrie after decades of requests by descendants of those who were killed in the battle. For Commonwealth News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
The Oxford Dictionary has selected its 2022 Word of the Year through an online vote. The winner? Goblin mode. It means a type of behavior which is unapologetically self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, or greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. The Word of the Year is intended to reflect, quote, the ethos, mood, or preoccupations of the past 12 months, end quote. Three experts at Oxford Dictionary selected three finalists, and for the first time, the public got to choose the winner from among them. This year, they picked Goblin Mode, Metaverse, and the hashtag #IStandWith. Goblin Mode first appeared on Twitter in 2009. It gained popularity in 2022 as the word emerged uncertainly from the pandemic lockdowns. In fact, despite being relatively unused offline, Goblin Mode was the overwhelming favorite, getting some 93% of the more than 340,000 votes that were cast. Last week, Merriam-Webster announced its word of the year, which is gaslighting. Gaslighting is a psychological manipulation intended to make a person question the validity of their own thinking. In 2021, the Oxford word of the year was vax, and Merriam-Webster's word was vaccine. You're listening to an end-of-year fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Monday, December 5th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, the producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegedoff, Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, Mark Moran, Roz Brown, Edwin J. Vieira, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fun drive, so now would be an awesome time to get involved. If you would like to become a member and support our incredible programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or just text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Noise Filter. Have a great night.